भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Today we're speaking from the glorious Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, the 3rd chapter, entitled The Birth of Lord Krishna. You're going to translate that? Okay, and the question I have is, if I'm going to read the purport, should I read that, or you should just read it in Hindi?
No, I'm not translating. Somebody's talking in the back.
What are you doing? Oh, who's translating? Nobody's it'll be translated? The class is going to be translated or not? Backside is being translated.
Simultaneous.
I don't have to stop. Okay, no problem. Very good. I'm not sure. Okay, so first we'll read the introduction to the chapter by Srila Prabhupada. As described in this chapter, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, Hari, in his original form, appeared as Vishnu, so that his father and mother could understand that their son was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because they were afraid of Kamsa, when the Lord appeared as an ordinary child, they took him to Gokula, the home of Nanda Maharaj. Mother Devaki, being fully transcendental, Sachidananda does not belong to this material world. As the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared with four hands as if born from her womb. Upon seeing the Lord in that Vishnu form, Vasudeva was struck with wonder. And in transcendental happiness, he and Devaki mentally gave 10,000 cows in charity to the Brahmanas. Vasudeva then offered prayers to the Lord, addressing him as the Supreme Person, Parabrahman, the Supersoul, who is beyond duality and who is internally and externally all-pervading. The Lord, the cause of all causes, is beyond material existence, although he is the creator of this material world. When he enters this world as Paramatma, he is all-pervading, Andantarasta Paramanu Charyantarastam. Yet he is transcendentally situated. For the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of this material world, the Lord appears as the guna avatars, Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwara. Thus Vasudeva offered prayers full of meaning to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Devaki followed her husband by offering prayers describing the transcendental nature of the Lord. Fearing Kamsa and desiring that the Lord not be understood by atheistic and materialistic non-devotees, she prayed that the Lord withdraw his transcendental four-armed form and appear like an ordinary child with two hands. The Lord reminded Vasudeva and Devaki of two other incarnations in which he appeared as their son. He appeared as Krishnagarbha and as Vamana Dev. And now this was the third time he was appearing as the son of Devaki to fulfill their desire. The Lord then decided to leave the residence of Vasudeva and Devaki in the prison house of Kamsa. And at this very time, Yoga Maya took birth as a daughter of Yashoda by the arrangement of Yoga Maya. Vasudeva was able to leave the prison house and save the child from the hands of Kamsa. When Vasudev brought Krishna to the house of Nanda Maharaj, he saw that Yashoda Maya, he saw that Yogamaya's arrangement, Yashoda, as well as everyone else, was deeply asleep. Thus he exchanged the babies, taking Yogamaya from Yashoda's lap and placing Krishna there instead. Then Vasudev returned to his own place, having taken Yogamaya as his daughter. He placed Yogamaya in Devaki's bed and prepared to be a prisoner as before. In Gokula, Yashoda could not understand whether she had given birth to a male or a female child. That's the end of the introduction. Before reading the text, the translation, we should remember that these verses were translated by Srila Prabhupada in 1977 when Srila Prabhupada was on his deathbed, literally. That the doctor said that because Srila Prabhupada had lost so much muscle tissue that any ordinary man would have been screaming in pain. I was just discussing this with Keshav Bharti Maharaj yesterday, how he was talking to a doctor in pain management, that because when the people lose muscle tissue, all the parts of the body grind against each other. And so any ordinary person would be racked in pain. But Srila Prabhupada, have you ever seen that video, the final lesson, you see that Srila Prabhupada is totally focused, totally conscious, and with a microphone laying in his deathbed, he is translating these verses and giving his purports, that he also is Sachidananda. He is not of this world. So that we should remember that when we're reading this, who has translated this for us, Srila Prabhupada, and what state of mind and what consciousness he was in when he did this. So we'll read the first five verses here. Therefore, at the auspicious time for the appearance of the Lord, the entire universe was surcharged with all the qualities of goodness, beauty, and peace. The constellation Rohini appeared, as did stars like Ashwini. The sun, the moon, and other stars and planets were very peaceful. All directions appeared extremely pleasing, and the beautiful stars twinkled in the cloudless sky. Decorated with towns, villages, mines, and pasturing grounds, the earth seemed all auspicious. The rivers flowed with clear water, and the lakes and vast reservoirs full of lilies and lotuses were extraordinarily beautiful. In the trees and green plants full of flowers and leaves, pleasing to the eyes, birds like cuckoos and swarms of bees were chanting with sweet voices for the sake of the demigods. A pure breeze began to blow, pleasing the sense of touch and bearing the aroma of flowers. And when the brahmanas engaged in ritualistic ceremonies ignited their fires according to the Vedic principles, the fires burned steadily, undisturbed by the breeze. Thus, when the birthless Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was about to appear, the saints and brahmanas, who had always been disturbed by demons like Kamsa and his men, felt peace within the core of their hearts, and kettle drums simultaneously vibrated from the upper planetary systems. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that his appearance, birth, and activities are all transcendental, and that one who factually understands them is immediately eligible to be transferred to the spiritual world. The Lord's appearance or birth is not like that of an ordinary man who is forced to accept a material body according to his past deeds. The Lord's appearance is explained in the previous chapter. He appears out of his own sweet pleasure. When the time was mature for the appearance of the Lord, the constellations became very auspicious. The astrological influence of the constellation known as Rohini was also predominant because this constellation is considered very auspicious. Rohini is under the direct supervision of Brahma, who is born of Vishnu and appears at the birth of Lord Vishnu, who is in fact birthless. According to the astrological conclusion, besides the proper situation of the stars, there are auspicious and inauspicious moments due to the different situations of the different planetary systems. At the time of Krishna's birth, planetary systems were automatically adjusted so that everything became auspicious. At that time, in all directions, east, west, south, north, everywhere, there was an atmosphere of peace and prosperity. Auspicious stars were visible in the sky. And on the surface, in all towns and villages, or pasturing grounds, and within the mind of everyone, there were signs of good fortune. The rivers were flowing full of water, and the lakes were beautifully decorated with lotus flowers. The forests were full with beautiful birds and peacocks. All the birds within the forest began to sing with sweet voices, and the peacocks began to dance with their consorts. The wind blew very pleasantly, carrying the aroma of different flowers, and the sensation of bodily touch was very pleasing. At home, the brahmanas, who were accustomed to offer sacrifices in the fire, found their homes very pleasant for offerings. Because of disturbances caused by the demonic kings, a sacrificial fire had been almost stopped in the houses of the brahmanas. But now they could find the opportunity to start the fire peacefully. Being forbidden to offer sacrifices, the brahmanas were very distressed in mind, intelligence, and activities. But just on the point of Krishna's appearance, automatically their minds became full of joy because they could hear loud vibrations in the sky of transcendental sounds proclaiming the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. On the occasion of Lord Krishna's birth, seasonal changes took place throughout the entire universe. Krishna was born during the month of September, yet it appeared like springtime. The atmosphere, however, was very cool, although not chilly, and the rivers and reservoirs appeared just as they would in Sharad, the fall. Lotuses and lilies blossomed during the day, but although Krishna appeared at 12 o'clock midnight, the lilies and lotuses were in bloom, and thus the wind blowing at that time was full of fragrance. Because of Kamsa's disturbance, the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies had almost stopped. The brahmanas and saintly persons could not execute the Vedic rituals with peaceful minds, but now the brahmanas were very pleased to perform their daily ritualistic ceremonies undisturbed. The business of the asuras is to disturb the asuras, the devotees and brahmanas. At the time of Krishna's appearance, these devotees and brahmanas were not disturbed. Srila Jiva Goswami has explained that if someone wants to
inquire into the Absolute Truth, into God. The first axiomatic principle is that they have to accept that God has achintya shakti, that He has inconceivable potencies, that there is nothing that God cannot do. So unless a person can accept that, then they should not enter into that investigation, because they will make offenses to faith. What we are about to read is what we just read just now, and what we are about to read in any of the Shastras, and specifically this chapter, if some materialistic person was to read this, some academic scholar, some scientist, some IT professional, businessman, whatever, someone in the four categories of asuras which are described in the ninth chapter of the Gita, if they read this, they'll simply say that this is mythology. These are stories for little children to keep them entertained so they don't make disturbances. But it is not for adults. It's not for an intelligent person. So, if somebody has that type of mentality, if they think that they know everything, and that everything, that God is a limited person like them, then they should not make any inquiries, because we have to understand that Krishna has achintya shakti. There is nothing that Krishna cannot do. Right? There's nothing that He cannot do. And it will be demonstrated many times in Shastra. And in fact, one of the principal points of this chapter is to demonstrate that Krishna has a achintya shakti. Krishna, it's described in this chapter, a couple of reasons why Krishna came. One of them is to get rid of the kings who are creating problems, Kamsa and company, get rid of them. And later on also to protect the devotees. Mother Devaki says that. But Krishna, He doesn't have to go to all this. Of course, it's not trouble. But Krishna doesn't have to do all these things. He doesn't have to appear this way in a cell and do all these things. Krishna, He can just give you a heart attack. Plenty of people are dying every day of heart attacks, right? They're dying of so many strokes and car accidents. Yeah. Krishna can kill you in so many ways. As Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, that I am death. Death. I'm destroying agents, I am death. He kills everybody. So it's not a big deal for Krishna to kill somebody. He is killing everybody, as He explained in the 11th chapter of Gita. Kalo Sneham, I am the destroyer of the worlds, and I have come to engage everyone. So everybody dies. So it's not something difficult for Krishna to kill. But then if Krishna just killed people like that, there wouldn't be Srimad Bhagavatam. It'd be very boring. There wouldn't be anything of interest. It would be a very boring. There wouldn't be a Shastra. There wouldn't be the 10th canto. Because Krishna has a higher purpose, not just killing people. That happens naturally. To those who are born, death is certain. Krishna explains in the 2nd chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So He didn't have to do anything. But Krishna comes in order, by manifesting His achintya shakti, then He attracts the minds of those persons who have some small grain of piety, some punya. They will be attracted. They will become attracted to Krishna, because this material world is a very hellish place. It's a very hellish. So His real purpose, of the many purposes, is to attract the minds of the living entities and bring them back out of this horrible place. It's a very horrible place. It's not nice. This is a very ugly, ugly world that we live in. Of course, by the Antaranga Shakti and the Baharanga Shakti, we think that is very nice. We've been thrown down into this material world, and we're covered by the illusion that we are enjoying. Srila Prabhupada gives that example. How about Lord Indra was cursed to be a hog, a pig who just eats stool.
And so after the curse was over, Lord Brahma came and said, okay, you can come back to Swarga. But said, oh no, I can't go. I have my wife, I have my children, you know, I have my car payments to make, so many different things. I have to stay here. Because he was thinking that this is a place of enjoyment. But anyone else could see it as a totally miserable place. So this is Krishna's purpose, is to attract the devotees. And as we engage with faith, we can either have faith in Krishna and Krishna's teaching, or we can have faith in with materialists, you know, scientists, academicians who say these are stories. We have a choice. We can choose to have faith in what materialists think, or we can choose to have faith in what Krishna says. We have a choice. It's free will. We don't have to believe in this. You know, it's not Shraddha. Shraddha means we have to trust. It's a trust. We cannot live without faith. It's impossible. It's a question of what you have faith in. It's not that you don't have faith. Either you can have faith in the politicians, or you can have faith in, you know, what it says in the newspapers, or you have to, just to get on, walk across the street, you have to have faith that you will make it to the other side, especially in Delhi. You know, you have to have faith. Everything requires faith. It's just, you know, so it's just a question of what you have faith in, who you have faith in. And so faith means trust. Ultimately means trust. So who are you going to trust? You're going to trust some academic scholars or some materialists, or are we going to trust rishis? Are we going to trust self-realized persons? Are we going to trust God? You know? And it's not that it has to be, it's blind faith. It's by experiment. You know? It's a scientific process. Srila Prabhupada always made the point that this is the science of God. So science means that there's theory, and then there's experiment to see if it's true, isn't it? Everybody's been in chemistry class, you know, they have, the professor gives theory, and then there's the lab. You know, the professor made this outrageous statement that if you mix one gas with another gas, you get water. How ridiculous. Who could believe such a fancy fairy tale? You mix carbon dioxide with oxygen, and it turns into a liquid. But then you go into the, but you have enough faith. Enough faith, some shraddha. Well, maybe he's not a complete lunatic. Let me go into the laboratory. He says, if I do it, it actually, lo and behold, there will be water. And you go, I had to have enough faith. Of course, you were motivated because you wanted to get your degree. you wanted to pass your exam. So you are definitely motivated by material advancement. So you went to the laboratory, you did the experiment, and then there was water. And so you had faith. Maybe everything else he's saying might also be true. And the more experiments you do, you find out that, yes, it's true what they're saying. So similarly, it's not blind faith, but we also, there is a theory, and then there's experiment. And the laboratory is in our heart. Right? The laboratory in the heart. So, when we read the shastras, then there is instructions, what we should do. So when we chant, the main instruction, specifically in Kali Yuga, is by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to chant these holy names of the Lord, the Maha Mantra, and by so doing, we, you know, in conjunction with reading the Shastras, we will see, yes, what Krishna is saying is true. It will be like a cataract is removed from your eyes. I remember when I first began reading Bhagavad Gita, and I began chanting the Maha Mantra, I was very far from some temple, but I distinctly recall realizing that I was seeing the world for the first time. I had not actually seen what the world was like until actually I started chanting the holy name and reading, you know. So when you chant, you can understand what is said in the Shastra, and when you read the Shastra, it gives you motivation to chant more. It's a synergistic process. So, the more we read and the more we chant, we will see that this world is an ugly place. It doesn't matter where you go, for
because Krishna directly guarantees that this place is designed by him to be what? Dukkalayam Ashashvatam. It's a temporary place. It's full of misery. On purpose. Not by mistake. It's by design. You know, like they say, planned obsolescence. There was in the early days of the automotive industry, they used to make cars which would last for 20 years, 30 years, no problem. The cars would last solid. But there became a problem. People weren't buying new cars. They weren't buying a new car. So what did the manufacturers, they came up with the idea, planned obsolescence. We'll make the car, we'll purposely make the car in such a way that it only lasts for a few years, and people have to buy it again. So it's not that the car is defective. They made it that way. So the material world, it's not a mistake. Some people, the atheists will say, I remember when I was young, I used to see this one television program, and this one man claimed, if there was a God, how could he allow there to be wars? How could he allow there to be starvation, famine, you know, earthquakes? What kind of, if there's a God, how could he allow such a thing? You know, so unexpert, so unprofessional. What kind of God is this? You know, he doesn't do things right. That can't be a God. And also one time I was giving a tour at the Palace of Gold, and this one Jewish lady, she said, the older Jewish lady, she said that if there was a God, how could he allow the Holocaust to happen? The Holocaust, if you don't know, took place in World War II, where 6 million Jews were slaughtered by the Nazis. So she is saying, if there was a God, how could he allow this to happen? So I just immediately said to her, if your father beats you, does this prove you don't have a father? Is it? If your father is beating you, this now proves you don't have a father. No, it means you have a father. Not that you don't have a father. So she understood. So this world, as my godbrother Shrita Danya Prabhu says, it is perfectly imperfect. It's perfectly imperfect on design. So that we will, by the process of chanting and reading Shastra, we will begin to understand how terrible it is. But then, if we just see that the world is terrible, a horrible place, then we could become very depressed, because the material world is depressive. We are very, so Srila Prabhupada said, we're very pessimistic about material life, for good reason. There's no future. But is the future of material life? For those who are born, death is certain. That's the future. We all die. No matter how much work we do, no matter how much studying we do, no matter how much money we make, we'll die. Miserable death. So we're pessimistic. Now, if that's all that there is, that's the only thing that we think of, then you could become very dark. You can have a very cynical view of life, leading to very self-destructive things, because we'll feel pain, but there won't be any higher purpose. So people, they feel pain. That's why there's drug addicts, that's why there's alcoholics. They go to the cinema, right? People go to the cinema. Why? For 2 hours, they can forget about their miserable life because they're totally involved in somebody else's miserable life. At least that they're forgetting their own miserable life, right? Or if they're drinking, they're forgetting temporarily. So this is called escapism, right? Escapism. There's a purpose. We want to escape because it's miserable. But the unfortunate thing is that this method of escapism doesn't really solve the problem, because at the end, we're still at the same place we were before, except that it's worse now. Right? Like in my bank that I go to, there's like a revolving door, right? If you get caught in a revolving door, you just keep going in circles. So this escapism is like a revolving door. You don't go anywhere. So unless we have this a higher purpose, will get stuck in very self-destructive things. Yeah? There are many self-destructive activities, not just drugs, not just alcohol, but just, you know, sleeping too much, because then people can dream. You know, it's like the built-in movie screen. They can dream, or they can eat a lot, comfort food, you know, read fantasy books, all these different things, just simply so they can forget. But Krishna performs his inconceivable activities just as a drama actor. He's a dramatic performer. All the world is a stage, said Shakespeare. In fact, in this case, the whole universe is Krishna's stage. And he is the main dramatic performer, and he comes with his whole dramatic troupe, and they all act. So many different activities, which are very pleasurable to Krishna, and which are simply inconceivable to us, how this can happen. Just like when we want to go see some movie where very special effects are there, you know, cars blowing up, you know, all these different things. It's interesting to us. So what to speak of Krishna's activities, what could be more interesting than what Krishna does? As we're going to see, he's going to appear at the very beginning of the verse. It explains how all the Lakshanas became very auspicious. The middle of the night, but all the flowers are blossoming. The astrological situation is very auspicious. Explains how the different astrological indicators, you know, that the moon is in Rohini. The moon is in Rohini because, first of all, Krishna is in the Chandra Vamsha. Krishna is a Surya Vamsha, Chandra Vamsha. So Krishna appeared in the Chandra Vamsha. So therefore, why the moon is in the Rohini? Because in Rohini, then the moon is in his Ucha Rashi. He's in Ucha Stan. He's very exalted. He's very high. And he's in Rohini Nakshatra. Is also one of the 27 Nakshatras are there. Ashwini, Bharani, Kritika, Rohini, Mrigashirsha, Ardra, Punarvasu, like this, you know, Pushyami, Ashlesha. Like, so they're all these nakshatras. They all have different devas who rule over them. And according to which deva is ruling over them, they have specific meaning and specific things are supposed to be done during those nakshatras. When the moon is in a particular nakshatra, you do a particular activity. For example, if the moon is in Bharani nakshatra, you should never do any type of auspicious activity. You should never perform a marriage ceremony. You should never give gifts during Bharani. You should never do any type of punya. Bharani is useful for killing somebody. It is useful for attacking, engaging in warfare, for starting a civil suit. You want to sue somebody. But because why? Why is that? Because Bharani is ruled by Yamaraj, Yama, the Lord of Death. So a different mood is there. So Krishna is not going to appear. Maybe Kalki will appear at that time, but not Krishna. Kalki might appear during that time because he will just kill everyone. Right? But Krishna appears during Rohini, which is ruled over by Lord Brahma, one of the three murtis. And we are in the Brahma Sampradaya. He is one of the Adi Gurus. So Krishna is very happy with Lord Brahma. He will have some leelas with Lord Brahma later in this canto, in the 10th canto. So Lord Brahma is always concerned. In fact, as it was explained earlier in the previous chapters, the devas went to Lord Brahma to find out, you know, to how to solve the problem that Bhumi was having. So Lord Brahma called Lord Vishnu. So therefore Vishnu appears during the Brahma Kala, during the time which ruled by Lord Brahma in the Rohini Nakshatra. Like that. So this is explaining, you know, how the moon will explain that even though it was midnight, even though it was the Ashtami, Krishna Ashtami, the moon still was Purna, the moon was full. and all the different debris, how all the different things appeared in a very nice way, because Krishna can do that. He makes the full, the moon full, even though it's only supposed to be half. He adjusts everything, because all of these configurations of planets, these things, these are all indicators of the Kala Shakti. It's astrology. The planets do not do anything. And sometimes people have this idea that the planets are doing things. I have to have Shani Puja. I have to have I have to placate Rahu. That's not true. The planets do not do anything. The planets are just lakshanas. They indicate what will happen. But they don't do anything. They cannot do anything. It's just a very elaborate language which Krishna has set up. Because as there are many other types of lakshanas, just like if you were to go on a journey, right? If you're going on a business journey, and if you see some girl carrying a full bucket of water or a full bucket of milk, it means you will have a very successful journey. Your trip will be, your business will flourish, you'll make lots of money. But if just as you're about to start your journey, you see somebody carrying an empty bucket, it means there will be a failure. So does it mean that somehow the bucket is affecting you? That rays, the bucket has some power over you? No. It means it's a lakshana, it's a sign. So similarly the planets, we look up in the sky, you look in the sky, you can see how everything is arranged by the Lord as a sign. So it's not that the planet, that the bucket has some power over you, not that the planet has some power over you, but it is given some significance by those persons who know how to understand. How to understand these different nimitta, the different lakshanas. It's a whole science described. And everybody knew these things. It's like Rukmini, she could tell. She could feel some twitching in her arm. She knew something auspicious must be happening. If you read in all the shastras, they understood these different lakshanas. Because everything is controlled by God. Everything is controlled by God. And if you are aware, then you can understand. If you have the eyes to see how Krishna is arranging everything. So all this system of astrology, all these different things were given not to mundane people, but they were given to rishis, to great saints. We'll read later that when Garga Muni appeared in front of Nanda Maharaj. So then Garga Muni is a great astrologer. But how did he become an astrologer? He could tell. He could tell Krishna's previous lifetimes. He could tell what Krishna is going to do. Balaram. How he could understand this? Because it's described in the Vishnu Purana that Garga Muni, he was worshipping Sankarshan. He was not an astrologer. He was worshipping Lord Sankarshan, Anantadev. And Anantadev blessed him. You will understand the secret meaning of the planets. So he could understand. Same with Vibhu, all these different rishis. They had some divya drishti. So they could see, they could understand everything. Just by seeing planets moving, birds flying, if the flame was burning, leaning this way, the flame, it all meant something to someone who has got that training. So because, again, it all has to do with the fact that Krishna has achieved his shakti, and the more a person becomes linked up with Krishna, he also is able to understand what Krishna's plans are, what he's going to do by the different language of communication which Krishna has established. So one very crude one method is this, astrology, nimitta. So Yudhisthira could tell. How could Yudhisthira know when Arjuna returned that something was wrong? He could understand something was very, very wrong. In the first canto. In this canto, we describe so many auspicious things indicating Krishna came. But in the first canto, Yudhisthira saw so many inauspicious things. The jackals are vomiting. the deities are crying, the water is perspiring, so you understand something very bad had happened. So what was that bad thing? Krishna had left. So when Krishna is coming, so many Shubha Lakshanas, and when Krishna is leaving, so many Ashubha Lakshanas.
The Kinnaras and Gandharvas began to sing auspicious songs. The Siddhas and Charanas offered auspicious prayers. And the Vidyadharis, along with the Apsaris, began to dance in jubilation. The demigods and great saintly persons showered flowers in a joyous mood, and clouds gathered in the sky and very mildly thundered, making sounds like those of the ocean's waves. Then the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, who is situated in the core of everyone's heart, appeared from the heart of Devaki in the dense darkness of night, like the full moon rising on the eastern horizon, because Devaki was of the same category as Sri Krishna. Vasudeva then saw the newborn child, who had very wonderful lotus-like eyes and who bore in his four hands the four weapons, Shankha, Chakra, Gada and Padma. On his chest was the mark of Sri Vatsa, and on his neck the brilliant Kaustubha Mani. Dressed in yellow, his body blackish like the dense cloud, his scattered hair fully grown, and his helmet and earrings sparkling uncommonly with the valuable gem of Vaidurya, the child decorated with a brilliant belt, armlets, bangles, and other ornaments appeared very wonderful. Now certainly, if some lady in Delhi gave birth to a child like this, it would be on the front pages, right? The statesman, the Hindu, they'd all be carrying this news, you know. Fully born child, hair, you know, wearing jewels, helmet. How did she give birth? He's carrying clubs, you know. Exactly, you know, how did this lady, you know, he's going to have a Sudha Shansha. That would definitely make the news, you know, that probably the president, the prime minister of India would want to go see, right? So this is Krishna. He's appearing like this. He can do this. I think other women would have a, you know, childbirth is difficult enough, but this would definitely be difficult for some lady to give birth to a child, you know, fully grown. Of course, in the Dwapara Yuga, when Krishna appeared, he probably was approximately, I think, 18 feet tall. Is it? Arjuna was 18 feet tall, and his arrows were 12 feet long. And Muchukunda thought that they were all pygmies, because Muchukunda was from a previous yuga. So when Muchukunda appeared, he thought that 18-foot tall people like Arjuna were pygmies. So the different size. So what to speak of? So today, if a lady gave birth to a child that was 6 foot tall, that would be, you know, that would be definitely make it into the newspapers. But who would believe such a story, right? But Krishna can do this. He can. If universes can come out of the skin holes, hold universes. Out of the pores of his skin, universes are coming out. And yet he enters into the heart of every atom. There's nothing that Krishna cannot do. Just like there was the Brahmin and the cobbler. So Narada Muni was walking and he met this Brahmin. And he asked, the Brahmin was, you know, how are you doing, Narada Muni? You know, where are you going? He says, I'm going to Vaikuntha. So, if you will see Lord Narayan, he says, yes. Can you please, when you ask Lord Narayan, when you see him, can you please ask him when I will get my moksha, when I will be able to see him? So Narada Muni said, okay, I'll ask. Then he saw one cobbler. And the cobbler immediately saw, you know, he immediately gave him a seat to sit down, washed his feet. Because he's very humble. So he said to Narada Muni, oh Narada Muni, you are such a great soul, you're always seeing the Lord, you know, I'm so foreign, etc., etc.
you know, you're going to Vaikuntha. When you go there, please ask the Lord, when will I be able to have His darshan? So then Narada Muni said yes. And then Narada Muni went to Vaikuntha. And in due course of time, the conversation turned to these two men. And Lord Narayan said, you tell that the Brahmin, that it will take crores of Brahmandas before he can come and have my darshan. Crores of lifetimes of Lord Brahma. And you tell the Kabbalah that in this lifetime alone, he will be able to see me. And Narada Muni was astonished. How is it possible? Why the Brahmin? He knows all the Vedas, he's doing so many Agnihotras, etc. Chant so many shlokas, he will take crores of Brahmandas, and the Brahmin who is always doing unclean work, how he'll be able to see you in one life? And so Lord Krishna said, Narayan said, you just, they will ask you, after you give them the answer, they will ask you, what was I doing when you saw me? You tell them, I was passing an elephant through the eye of a needle. Then you'll understand. So Narada Muni said, okay. He had had these experiences with Lord Narayan before, so he knew that this is some pastime. So he goes back. And again, he meets the Brahmin. So the Brahmin is saying, so, when will be my moksha? And this is today? No. So Narada Muni said, well, I'm sorry, I have to tell you, but Lord Narayan said that it will take crores of Brahmandas before you will go back. You'll be able to have his darshan. And the Brahmin was, what? How can this possibly be? You know, I do so many tapasyas, I'm chanting the Vedas, and so many things, you know. How do I know you went there? How do I know you're not, how do I know you're even Narada Muni? You could be a lookalike. You might not be the real Narada Muni. What was Narayan doing? What was he doing? How do I know? Tell me, prove it. So Narada Muni said, well, actually, when I was in Vaikuntha, I saw Lord Narayan passing an elephant through the eye of a needle. Then, ha! What is this? I am a pundit. I'm not stupid. You can't pass an elephant through the eye of a needle. Everybody knows this. Ah, God. Narada Muni look like not the real. Take this back. Now the guy is a complete crackpot. So then Narada Muni went to the cobbler. And the cobbler welcomed him very humbly, seated him down and washed his feet, gave him some water according to his ability. And you know, he said, oh Narada Muni, you were in Vaikuntha? What was happening? You know, what were you doing? You know, did the Lord say when I will have his darshan? And Narada Muni said, yes. He said, in this very lifetime, you will have his darshan. And the cobbler was astonished. How? Is it me? I'm so fallen. How is it possible? Oh, you know, he was glorifying the Lord. He says, tell us, what was some of the pastimes? What was the Lord doing when you saw him? Tell us some of his leelas. I want to hear. So Narada Muni said, well, actually, when I was speaking with the Lord, he was passing an elephant through the eye of a needle. And the cobbler, oh, just see how great is our Lord. How great is the Lord Narayan? He's passing an elephant through the eye of a needle. Yes, how wonderful. And Narada Muni says, oh, you believe that? You actually believe that? He was passing. Yes, why not? He says, I'm sitting, this is a banyan tree. You're sitting under a banyan tree. And he picked up a seed. If Lord Narayan, in this seed is a whole banyan tree. And on that banyan tree there's many seeds. And all of those seeds have got more banyan trees. So Lord Narayan can put millions of banyan trees into this one little seed. What is the problem to pass an elephant to the eye of a needle? Then Narada Muni can understand. What is it that the person understands that God can do anything? So he can appear fully dressed, clothing with armor, with clubs, weapons. He'd be born that way. So we should understand that Krishna can do anything. And when Vasudeva saw his extraordinary son, his eyes were struck with wonder. In transcendental jubilation, he mentally collected 10,000 cows and distributed them amongst the Brahmins as a transcendental festival. O Maharaj Parikshit, descendant of King Bharat, Vasudev could understand that this child was the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayana. Having concluded this without a doubt, he became fearless, bowing down with folded hands and concentrating his attention. He began to offer prayers to the child who illuminated his birthplace by his natural effulgence. Vasudev said, "My Lord, you are the Supreme Person beyond material existence, and you are the Supersoul. Your form can be perceived by transcendental knowledge, by which you can be understood as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I now understand your position perfectly. My Lord, you are the same person who in the beginning created this material world by your personal external energy. After the creation of this world, the three gunas, you appear to have entered it, although in fact you have not. The Mahatattva, the total material energy, is undivided. But because of the material modes of nature, it appears to separate into earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Because of the living energy, Jiva Bhuta, these separated energies combine to make the cosmic manifestation visible. But in fact, before the creation of the cosmos, the total energy is already present. Therefore, the total material energy never actually enters the creation. Similarly, although you are perceived by our senses because of your presence, you cannot be perceived by the senses nor experienced by the mind or words. With our senses, we can perceive some things, but not everything. For example, we can use our eyes to see, but not to taste. Consequently, you are beyond the perception by the senses. Although in touch with the modes of material nature, you are unaffected by them. You are the prime factor in everything, the all-pervading, undivided Supersoul. For you, therefore, there is no external or internal. You never entered the womb of Devaki. Rather, you existed there already." So here, Vasudev is explaining some of the inconceivable attributes of his son. Krishna has explained in the Gita, he is that these ashta, you know, these elements, the Mahabhutas, these are his separated energies. He puts everything together, takes it apart. It is all made from his energy. It's all made from his energy. So it's nothing for him to. It's not like he had to enter into her womb. He was already there, as he's residing in Devaki's heart. He is in the soul of every atom. So to us it appears very inexplicable, but to Krishna it's nothing. Just like when we see some movie which looks very amazing, especially the Western movies which have a lot of special effects. When I was first watching Hindi movies, you know, they were not overly believable. You know, they have, you know, to give the example of, you know, Lakshmi and Narayan on the Karna Ocean, they would, in the old movies, they'd have like some fish bowl with a fish floating through it, and on the other side they'd have, you know, the actors. This was, we call those special defects. But in more high-tech movies, they make them look very believable. It looks real, actually. You know, it looks real. They have big gorillas marching, you know, climbing up buildings, you know, like King Kong and so many of these space wars. It looks all very believable. You know, they have them, all these different things. But if you go to these, you know, Bollywood, if you go to, you know, Hollywood, right, but to Hollywood, you see how they make the movies. It's all, you know, it's just all, anybody, you know, when they had their proper equipment, anybody could do it. It's you just have to know how to do it. So for Krishna, it's nothing. It's nothing for him to do these things. Because he created the material energy. He created earth. He created all these things. So what's
these things are just nothing. One who considers his visible body, which is a product of the three modes of nature, to be independent of the soul, is unaware of the basis of existence, and therefore he is a rascal. Those who are learned have rejected this conclusion, because one can understand through full discussion that there is no basis in soul. The visible body and senses would be insubstantial. With no basis in soul, the visible body, the senses would be unsubstantial. There, nonetheless, although his conclusion has been rejected, a foolish person considers it a reality. So if you were to go to a movie with somebody, and that movie, and that your friend began to think that actually what they saw in the movie was real, would you think that they were very smart? You think they're pretty stupid, right? So this world is like that. It's a virtual reality. Now that people are becoming more familiar with computers, they have a virtual reality machine. You can actually hook up computer, small video screens onto your eyes, put speakers in your ears, and they put sensors on your hands so that when you move, you see a hand move in the screen. Two years ago, I was at the convention for the annual convention of the American Psychiatric Association. Thousands of psychiatrists. So one of the displays was a virtual reality machine, so that people could get over different phobias that they had. They put these glasses on you, a whole thing on your head, on your ears, and you look inside. This display was for and a special seat. This display was for people who were afraid of flying. So you put the glasses on, you look around, you're inside an airplane. When you look, you're in an airplane. You look outside the window and you see the wings, you see clouds going by. And when the engine's going, the seat starts to move, vibrate, and you think you're taking off because you see you're in an airplane. You look, everywhere you look, there's an air. You see the seat beside you. There's nobody in the plane. You're alone. Because they found it was better therapy that way. But you actually think you're in an airplane and you're flying. And you have a complete sensation that you're in an airplane. And if you were to have it on all the time, you actually were thinking you'd be in an airplane. They had other ones were soldiers who came back from the war. They were very heavily traumatized. They have post-traumatic stress disorder. So if they simply smell a certain smell, they begin to, if they hear a certain clicking sound, they immediately go for their weapons. If they smell diesel, they immediately jump in because the people are shooting at them. Somebody gets into, I remember I was in a car accident one time because it rained. I almost died. And so for the next 6 months, if I was driving and it rained, I was terrified. So that's one incident. So these soldiers, every day people are trying to kill them. So they're very, they were able to make an illusion, even including smells. The smell of Iraqi cooking, the smell of sweaty soldiers. So that the soldiers, they actually thought it was real, and then they can calm them down. So they don't have any psychiatric problems. So that's what modern science can do. Krishna has explained in the Uddhava Gita, he explains to Uddhava how what happens is the mind wraps itself around the soul, around the material mind wraps itself around the material spiritual soul mind, and all the material body is covered by matter. The spiritual body is covered by matter, just as in a virtual reality. We begin to think it's real. If a person walked around with those goggles all the time, after a while they would begin to see that way. What to speak of, we're been in this virtual reality for billions of lifetimes. We don't know, it's all that we know. We can't remember our past existence in the spiritual world. So it is a complete and total illusion. That's why Krishna has to come and do these things to shock us out of this, shock us out of the reality. We can't do these things. Only he can do them because he's got control of the program. He's the computer program. He can build in certain other programming things that we can't do.
O my Lord, learned Vedic scholars conclude that the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of the entire cosmic manifestation are performed by you, who are free from endeavor, unaffected by the modes of material nature, and changeless in your spiritual situation. There are no contradictions in you, who are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Param Brahman, because the three modes of material nature, sattva, rajas, and tamas, are under your control. Everything takes place automatically. So in this verse, Vasudeva is saying how learned Vedic scholars conclude, you know, that Krishna is God. Arjuna says the same thing. And 10th chapter, I believe it is, yes, of the Gita, that other rishis like Narada, Devala, Vyasa, they've all said that Krishna is God, that now you yourself are stating that you are God. But why did these rishis say that? How did they come to that? They're not just by reading Shastra that they had faith, but they actually had experience of Krishna's wonderful attributes. In the 12th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam and also in the Mahabharata, in the Vanaparva, Markandeya Rishi, he comes and he meets with the Pandavas in the forest. At the same time, just as when he comes, at the same time Krishna comes. And Markandeya Rishi is practically one of the oldest people, except for Lord Brahma. And I think Markandeya Rishi actually lives longer than Brahma. For every hair in his body, it's for every Lord Brahma. Huh?
Lomasa Rishi.
Okay. But anyway, Markandeya Rishi also lives very, very long. He's a Chiranjeeva. Long time. But he appeared only like a 25-year-old boy. 25-year-old young man. And Krishna appeared there. So there's many chapters. And Yudhishthira begins questioning Markandeya Rishi. Markandeya Rishi looking at Krishna. And he begins to explain how he's so old. His life, you know, he goes through many Mahayugas, through many kalpas, you know, life of Lord Brahma. And how one time there was, you know, the complete devastation was there. And he was, you know, the whole universe, everything was destroyed. And he was swimming in the causal ocean, in the Garbha ocean, and his Timingala fish and his crocodiles and sharks, and he's like terrified, completely terrified. Heavy lightning, thunder. It's a terrible situation. He's the only living human, you know, living being, practically speaking, you know, human. Everybody else has been killed except up in Janaloka, and he's swimming around, and this is going on for a long time. The night of Lord Brahma. It's a long, very long time. It's not like for a few hours. It's going on for a very long time. Then he notices something glowing. And he swims towards that. And then he sees on his big banyan leaf is laying a little boy, like the baby, bluish in color, sucking on his own toe. And he comes to track and he's looking. And then the baby breathes in and breathes Markandeya Rishi inside of him. So now he's inside of Markandeya Rishi, is now inside of the baby. And he sees a whole other universe. And he's wandering, he's going all over. He's trying to find the end of this universe. He's going, walking here, walking there for millions of years. Billions of years, trying to find the end of the universe and becoming full of anxiety. Where is the end? I'm inside this baby. Where? How do I get out? And then he's then breathed out again. And he's back in the water. And then Krishna begins speaking to him like this, you know. I did, you know, he explains why he did this and like that, you know. I didn't want you to be in anxiety, like that, you know. And so then he explains all of this to Yudhishthira. And he points, and this Janardhan, your cousin, that's that baby. This Janardhan, your cousin, he is this Lord, this Supreme Person. So they were told, so that's why Arjuna said he had heard this from so many rishis. Then when he saw the universal form, then he understood himself. Oh, Krishna can he has universes inside his belly, you know, like, or Mother Yashoda was, you know, looking in Krishna's mouth to see if he had any mud in his mouth, you know, so she saw the whole cosmic manifestation.
So when Vasudeva is saying that, you know, Vedic, once the scholars concluded that not simply by reading, they saw, they experienced, like Markandeya, he experienced Krishna, direct experience of Krishna, of what he could do. He had implicit faith, you know, in what Krishna was capable of doing. My Lord, your form is transcendental to the three material modes. Yet, for the maintenance of the three worlds, you assume the white color of Vishnu in goodness. For creation, which is surrounded by the quality of passion, you appear reddish. And at the end, when there is a need of annihilation, which is surrounded by ignorance, you appear blackish. O my Lord, proprietor of all creation, you have now appeared in my house. Desiring to protect this world, I'm sure that you will kill all the armies that are moving all over the world under the leadership of politicians who are dressed as Kshatriya rulers but who are factually demons. They must be killed by you for the protection of the innocent public. So here, Vasudeva is stating one of the external reasons that Lord Krishna appears. For, you know, as he also explains in the Gita, whenever there's a decline in Dharma and religion, Krishna comes and destroys these demons. But like, as I said earlier, he could do it by some other means. The actual reason is to attract, you know, to protect the devotee, but actually to attract the living entities by his pastime, his qualities. But that's one of the specific features of Krishna. Of course, in different yugas, different manvantaras, Krishna comes, you know, as Varaha, as Lord Ram, as Vamanadev, you know, so many for different purposes. So, but specifically in the form as Krishna, you know, that Vishnu and the Vishnu Tattva, they have up to 60 qualities that Lord Krishna. Krishna has 64 qualities, they have 60 qualities. He has four special qualities which are not found in the Vishnu Tattva. And one of them is that he has super excellent pastimes. He has special pastimes which are all attractive, even to the point that Vishnu is attracted, Mahavishnu. He also wanted to see. He arranged for the killing of the sons of the Brahmin, and that Arjuna then had to try to protect the sons and the whole thing, so that eventually Arjuna and Krishna had to go see Mahavishnu. That Krishna could take his friend out of the material universe. So it's the real reason is to display his pastimes so that the soul, so that we can be dragged back to our original position. O my Lord, Lord of the demigods, after hearing the prophecy that you would take birth in our home and kill him, this uncivilized Kamsa killed so many of your elder brothers. As soon as he hears from his lieutenants that you have appeared, he will immediately come with weapons to kill you. Shukadeva Goswami continued, therefore, having seen that her child had all the symptoms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Devaki, who was very much afraid of Kamsa and unusually astonished, began to offer prayers to the Lord. Sri Devaki said, my dear Lord, there are different Vedas, some of which describe you as unperceivable through words and mind. Yet you are the origin of the entire cosmic manifestation. You are Brahman, the greatest of everything, full of effulgence like the sun. You have no material cause. You are free from change and deviation, and you have no material desires. Thus the Vedas say that you are the substance. Therefore, my Lord, you are directly the origin of all Vedic statements. And by understanding you, one gradually understands everything. You are different from the light of Brahman and Paramatma, yet you are not different from them. Everything emanates from you. Indeed, you are the cause of all causes, Lord Vishnu, the light of all transcendental knowledge. So here again, Devaki is telling, you know, she's declaring that she understands that Krishna is beyond all these things, that Krishna is supremely transcendental, that he can do the inconceivable because he is the creator of everything. This is nature, axiomatic. After millions of years, at the time of cosmic annihilation, when everything manifested and unmanifested is annihilated by the force of time, the five gross elements enter into this subtle conception, and the manifested categories enter into the unmanifested substance. At that time, you alone remain, and you are known as Ananta Sesha Naga. O inaugurator of the material energy, this wonderful creation works under the control of powerful time, which is divided into seconds, minutes, hours, and years. This element of time, which extends for many millions of years, is but another form of Lord Vishnu. For your pastimes, you act as the controller of time, but you are the reservoir of all good fortune. Let me offer my full surrender unto your lordship. So Mother Devaki is in summary giving the whole of Sankhya Yoga, you know, describing all the material elements, the subtle body, you know, the mind, the intelligence, the false ego, time, the trigunas. The time, it is the time factor, as explained in other parts of the Bhagavatam, which is actually creates the separated energy. It is a time factor which enters into the pradhan, stirs up, creates the trigunas. It is the time factor which creates the material energy. It is the separative energy. It is what creates the separated energies. So Srila Prabhupada explains, what does this mean, separated energy? One of his disciples was asking, what does it mean to be separated energy? Well, it was a morning walk in Juhu, and they were tape recording the conversation. Then they had two tape recorders just to make sure that that there would be a no, you know, if one tape ended, that there would be somebody taping the, while they're changing tapes. So Prabhupada said, okay, now play back what I just said. So then you hear in a tape recording Prabhupada speaking, and Prabhupada's listening. He says, that's my separated energy. It's me, but it's not me at the same time. It's separated. So that's what separated energy is. Like that, he gave that example. No one in this material world has become free from the four principles, birth, death, old age, and disease, even by fleeing to various planets. But now you have appeared, my Lord. Death is fleeing in fear of you, and the living entities, having obtained shelter at your lotus feet, by your mercy, are sleeping in full mental peace. My Lord, because you dispel all the fear of your devotees, I request you to save us and give us protection in the terrible fear of Kamsa. Your form as Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is appreciated by yogis in meditation. Please make this form invisible to those who see with material eyes. O Madhusudana, because of your appearance, I am becoming more and more anxious in fear of Kamsa. Therefore, please arrange for that sinful Kamsa to be unable to understand that you have taken birth from my womb. O my Lord, you are the all-pervading Supreme Personality of Godhead, and your transcendental four-armed form, holding conch shell, disc, club, and lotus, is unnatural for this world. Please withdraw this form, just like a natural human child, so that I may try to hide you somewhere. At the time of devastation, the entire cosmos, containing all created moving and non-moving entities, enters your transcendental body and is held there without difficulty. But now this transcendental form has taken birth from my womb. People will not be able to believe this, and I shall become the object of ridicule. Mother Devaki is concerned, like a lady. Ladies are concerned about these things. They're very concerned about, you know, if they don't look right, or they don't want to be ridiculed by, specifically by other ladies. So let's hear what Srila Prabhupada says about this. It's an interesting purport here. Why it was that she didn't, specifically about it being ridiculed, purport by Srila Prabhupada. As explained in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, loving service to the personality of Godhead is of two different kinds. Aishwarya Purna, full of opulence, and Aishwarya Sitila, without opulence. Real love of Godhead begins with Aishwarya Sitila, simply on the basis of pure love. Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochanena Santasadeva Hridayeshu Vilokayanti Yamsham Sundaram Achintya Guna Swarupam Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Pure devotees whose eyes are anointed with the ointment of prema, love, want to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Shama Sundara, Murlidhar, with the flute swaying in his two hands. This is the form available to the inhabitants of Vrindavan, who are all in love with the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Shama Sundara, not as Lord Vishnu, Narayan, who is worshipped in Vaikuntha, where the devotees admire his opulence. Although Devaki is not on the Vrindavan platform, she is near the Vrindavan platform. On the Vrindavan platform, the mother of Krishna is Mother Yashoda, and on the Mathura and Dwarka platform, the mother of Krishna is Devaki. In Mathura and Dwarka, the love for the Lord is mixed with appreciation of his opulence. But in Vrindavan, the opulence of the Supreme Lord is not exhibited. There are five stages of loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead: Shanta, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, Madhurya, and Madhurya. Devaki is on the platform of Vatsalya. She wanted to deal with her eternal son, Krishna, in that stage of love, and therefore she wanted the Supreme Personality of Godhead to withdraw his opulent form of Vishnu. Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur eliminates this fact very clearly in his explanation of this verse. Bhakti, Bhagavan, and Bhakta do not belong to the material world. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 14:26. Mamcha yogyavicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. One who engages in the spiritual activities of unalloyed devotional service immediately transcends the modes of material nature and is elevated to the spiritual platform. In the very beginning of one's transactions in bhakti, one is situated on the transcendental platform. Vasudeva and Devaki, therefore, being situated in a completely pure devotional state, are beyond this material world and are not subject to material fear. In the transcendental world, however, because of pure devotion, there is a similar conception of fear, which is due to intense love. So that is, there's a lot more of the purport, but there's just a few more verses. Then we'll finish this chapter.
How many verses?
Actually, there's quite a few verses. There's quite a few more verses. So I'll just read a few more verses and then we'll... I'll just read a few more. It's 9:30 now.
So maybe only question
comes. Okay. All right. Does anybody have any questions or answers? Any questions? Questions, doubts, comments? Yes.
Only for the body, for the master, for the body. It's only simple. If somebody, I can just reach him, I have to do it. So I have to see somebody. So it is not so. See, your is not.
Well, somebody else does it, it has no effect. Then those things have to appear by higher authority. So who is the highest authority? Krishna is himself his own authority. So Krishna arranges those things because it's indicating that he's appearing. So it's not some sort of an artificial thing. Nothing is artificial about Krishna. If you were to make something like that, then it would have no effect. It wouldn't mean anything. If somebody arranges that before going on a journey, somebody appears with a full bucket of water, they won't get the result because it didn't happen. It wasn't Krishna indicating to that person. If it happens naturally, it means that by higher authorities, it's an indication that you will have a success. But if you do it yourself, if you're just fooling yourself, higher force. There's no, the devas are not indicating it to you. But Krishna, if he does it, then he is the highest authority. There's no one higher, no more supreme deva, because he is Satya Sankalpa. All his desires manifest according to his will. Then, that's the difference. If you artificially put some indicator, you won't get the result that it indicates because it's artificial. But when Krishna does it, the result happens. That is the difference. Please speak into the mic. Can you speak a little more clearly? At the time of Krishna's birth, what?
All the species are there, no?
Yes.
And Kansa was looking at all these. Kansa. What was Kansa doing?
What was Kansa what?
Kansa was not doing his bad things.
Kansa was doing what?
Yeah, this question. All the auspicious science were there.
Yeah.
So what about the activity of Kansa? Kamsa's activities are always inauspicious.
Yeah.
What happened to Kamsa, his activities?
I don't know. But I know that Kamsa, at a certain point, Kamsa also began to see certain signs. He saw, when he looked in the mirror, he could not see his reflection. When he looked at his shadow, he saw holes in his shadow. These were also signs of a different sort, indicating his future demise. So, of course, this whole thing is a dramatic leela. It's a drama. So there has to be different parties there. So Kamsa is also playing he's the uncle of Krishna. And of course, because he is killed by Krishna, eventually, he also gets some higher elevation. But at least in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's not explaining what Kamsa was doing. Kamsa was sleeping. He was in deep ignorance. He was asleep at that time.
My dad has come and he was sleeping and he was falling down.
That's a different chapter. Next chapter. That happens in the next chapter. But Kamsa also saw signs, but a different time, of a different sort, indicating his own demise. Any other questions?
Krishna showed for the universe to mantra name. When you are an intelligent person and you are the powerful person, when you tell everybody that I am powerful, I am intelligent. So my question is, what was the motive, what was the aim of Krishna to show the universe to mantra name?
Because Markandeya Rishi had a, you're talking about from the Mahabharata or from the Srimad Bhagavatam? Which the pastime is told slightly differently in the Mahabharata and in the Srimad Bhagavatam. But anyway, the purpose was that Markandeya Rishi had in his heart certain desires. Just as why did Krishna show the universal form to Arjuna to prove, to demonstrate, to instill that faith in Arjuna? Similarly, because Arjuna wanted to see. So similarly, Krishna could understand in the heart of Markandeya Rishi that he had certain desires. So he did that. And also, because Markandeya Rishi was his devotee and he was in anxiety, so when he saw the light, he became pacified. And then when he went inside the body of the Lord, then after some time he became frightened. So then the Lord expelled him out of the body, just again to relieve his anxiety. Because Markandeya Rishi, he was a great tapasvi and he was a devotee. But these are different ways that the Lord was illuminating Markandeya Rishi about his existence and who he was. Because Markandeya Rishi could understand these things. Because also, Markandeya Rishi is from a previous yuga. He had different methodology of doing sadhana as well. Did I answer your question? Any other questions? All right. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Srimad Bhagavatam Granth Raj Ki Jai.